And I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe David Chicky. He is publisher and creative director of Radius Books. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, Mary Charlotte. Thanks for having us on.
So you're having a big event tomorrow. It's an artist party involving all kinds of things, which we'll talk about in a moment, at the Farmers Market from 5 to 8. And we thought this would be a good chance to introduce folks to Radius Books, which is a publisher in Santa Fe, a nonprofit art book publisher. How did it start? What's it all about?
We started 6 years ago, officially. We published our first four books in the fall of 2007, so we've now reached our sixth anniversary. We've published to date just over 80 books, which is great. We're really excited about and wonderful to get this far. It started largely because I had a background as a designer, as a book designer, working with publishers from other book publishing companies, mainly art books. My background and all of my professional interest has been in art-related projects, contemporary art. So we decided to start this conversation about a publishing company because we began to see in the publishing industry at large, and specifically in the art book publishing industry, that there were some shifts happening and that maybe some art books weren't getting published in the way that maybe would be the most ideal way to publish them. And we were really engaged and excited, and I've long been interested in trying to realize artists' visions in a way that I think a book is a rare and unique way to do that. And to start our own publishing company gave us the opportunity to maybe do that in a unique and interesting way.
What I really appreciate about your books is that they're not just about artists and art, which they are, but they are themselves, in a way, works of art. Do you conceive of the book itself as a kind of object, as an art object?
Very consciously, and I think we've gained a reputation for doing that. But I think artists' visions, writers' visions, are often very complicated. And a book is also a very complicated object, or can be. And there's a lot of opportunity in a book form to represent all kinds of information in really interesting ways. And so we work very closely with artists if they're alive, or we work with the estate of an artist if the artist isn't alive, to make an object that can represent that complexity to the best way possible. And not intentionally complex, but if it is a complex concept, then it's really a book is a rare and interesting, at least to me, it's a rare and interesting way in which that can be done. It can do it in a way that's different than an exhibition or different than going to visit an artist's studio, all of which can be remarkable experiences, but a book is a very intimate thing and it's a very one-on-one experience. And so when you hold a book and you flip through a book and you look at something, there's an opportunity there that I think you can engage and create a really great and very singular kind of experience.
And there's things that you can do, like I was at Radius Books a couple of days ago looking at a book by an artist who took a bunch of photographs in Hawaii, and there are entire pages throughout the book that are just solid colors that reflect the colors in some of the photographs, and in a way are these like blank spaces where the viewer can just stop and reflect on color itself and then go on to more photographs. It's so cool.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, that book is, well, I should say in general that I don't really believe in design for design's sake, but I think as a designer, if I can sort of ingest the work and sort of live in it as best I can, then design ideas come out of that organically. And that book in particular, which is a new book that we've just published by an artist named Betsy Carroll, is very much about color and about this immersive experience and a very specific kind of color in Hawaii. And I do think that those pages of color give you clues to the work and a way to look at the work and think about color that maybe you wouldn't do. And again, it's different. You wouldn't necessarily paint an exhibition space, different bright colors, but you have that opportunity in a book to have those moments where you pause and just reflect on the idea of color.
And you don't tell somebody to do that. You just give them the chance to do it.
That's right.
Which is very, very nice. There's a lot of very interesting books. Another one is called Working the Line, and it's about the U.S.-Mexico border. And this book is printed in, what do you call it, like an accordionized shape?
It's an accordion fold.
An accordion fold. So that if you take it out and unfold it on your long dining room table, it becomes a kind of border, and it's about the border. And so, not that everyone would exactly do that, but it gives you the chance to think about the material visually in that way.
I think so, and I think this is the book you're referring to is a book by David Taylor called Working the Line, and David was the recipient of a Guggenheim and spent many years and still continues to spend time photographing on the border, and the border is borders all over the world become lines. They become these visual impediments, and or can be considered that way. And so taking this book and turning it into this accordion fold, and in David's case, that accordion fold is, when pulled out, over 40 feet long. And so it really, and it has images on both sides of it, of the monuments that run along the border. And so it does, it becomes kind of a visual way that you can talk about what it is that's happening on the border. And the book sort of begins to reflect and make that conversation maybe a little more complex and interesting.
And who knew that there were these sort of obelisky monuments all along the U.S.-Mexico border?
I think very few people do. There's 276 of them. He started systematically photographing every single one of them. It's a project that he's just finished. We published his first book over 2 years ago, and he's now gone back and finished photographing all of them. But these were obelisks that were placed on two different expeditions in the late 1800s, marking the border between the U.S. and Mexico, and they're placed visually so that their distance from another is staggered depending on how complex the terrain is. So some are quite far apart and some are quite close together, so that literally you could walk from monument to monument and mark your way all the way from the border of Texas to the Pacific Ocean in California.
Because you can see each one.
Because you can see each one as you're walking from one to the next.
And that book also includes all the other stuff that's going on in the border area, or a lot of the other stuff that's going on besides the monuments themselves.
Yeah, his project really started as this documentation of those monuments. And of course, now the wall is being built alongside these. And so it's a much more complicated place than that description of those monuments makes it sound. But what naturally happened is that as a photographer, as he was photographing the monuments themselves, he also was having interaction with the people who were there, whether those are Border Patrol or whether those are people that are coming across the border. And naturally, as a documentary photographer, he began to photograph everything else that was happening. And so we put the book together in two split elements. One is a book that contains the images of those other things, and then the other is this accordion fold object that we were talking about.
There are a number of two-part books that you've published. Another one is by a photographer who does kind of ethnographic work in New Guinea.
We now have a co-publishing relationship with Harvard University and the Peabody Museum Press. The press selects a recipient every year of what they call the Gardner Prize. It's a prize in photography given to a photographer working in a documentary vein somewhere in the world. And that photographer is given a stipend to produce a body of work over a period of a year, and at the end of the year, they do a show at the Peabody Museum, and we produce a book. So this year's recipient is Stephen DuPont. He's based in Australia, and he's long been interested in and long photographed in Papua New Guinea. For this particular project, he went back and photographed over a pretty wide geographic area inside Papua New Guinea, documenting both indigenous cultures as well as some of the more urban areas in and around the country. And we put that book together, and it's in two parts because there's the work that he was sent to make, which are the photographs taken with 4x5 camera in a somewhat anthropological historical vein, where he's taking white and black sheets and holding them behind individuals or groups of people and photographing them sort of in that history of archaeological documentation.
But also kind of making fun of it, because the idea that you can isolate somebody against a white or black background and learn something about them out of context has been totally discredited.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's conscious of that. And so he's actually not just silhouetting the figure with just an unexamined white sheet. He's photographing the people holding the sheet behind it. He backed the camera up a little bit, and you get a more complex vision. But he also keeps these remarkable journals whenever he works. And in this case, he kept several of them, and he draws in them. He cuts out magazine clippings. He keeps his notes. And so we chose to publish a lot of that material as well, and in a separate volume and on a different kind of paper, so that you have the more formal portraits in one book, and then you have the more supportive archival material about how he worked and what he was doing. And I think, again, that gives you a better overall experience of what it's like for an artist to be working and producing a body of work.
We're talking to David Chicky of Radius Books. Now, how do you select the subjects of your books? I mean, you've published a lot, 82 books, but there's so many artists and so many people out there. How do you make your selections?
It's become increasingly more complicated for us to make the decision about what we publish. We've grown relatively quickly, or I guess to some people's minds, slowly. We started with 4 books in our first year. Our second year, I think we published 8 books. This past year, we published 18 books, and we have 18 books on the list for next year. I think that number, somewhere around 15 or 20, is about the maximum that we can publish, and publish in this very crafted way that we want to publish books. So there are far more valid, interesting, exciting projects out there than the small number that we can do. So we look at a lot of projects. We get a lot of submissions for a lot of projects. But for me, one of the things that we haven't talked about much is this is the nonprofit aspect of Radius and the donation part of our program, where we donate copies of our books to libraries and schools all over the country. And I've become, as Radius has grown and as we've developed, much more conscious of what the audience for these books is. And so as we decide to publish books, whether that's for an established artist or an unknown artist, I'm very aware that those books are going to an audience that'll have an educational slant to it, or people will not have been familiar with that particular part of an artist's work, or never seen this photographer from Papua New Guinea, or never thought about the border in that particular way. Or so that sort of informs how we make decisions.
So you're donating a lot of books to schools and colleges?
A big part of our mission from the moment we started was that we structured the publishing company as a nonprofit. On one level, that's a nod and an understanding to the fact that a lot of for-profit publishers are having to make decisions about the books they publish driven by how many copies of books they can sell. It's the reality of the economics. And sometimes we'll make compromises or pull back from maybe the full vision of an artist or the most innovative or risky way of looking at that artist's work in the spirit of selling a book for a lower price to a more mass audience. So as a nonprofit, we step away from some of those limitations. The other thing that happened is that in the research of thinking about the company, I was going to seminars and hearing publishers complain about the loss of sales, where it used to be that an art book publisher would have an expectation that there were 1,000, 1,500, 2,000 libraries across the country that would buy those books. And libraries' budgets have been cut so significantly that they've cut those more expensive art books. And I had this concept that while that's a shame for publishers from the perspective of lost sales, isn't it much more significantly problematic for libraries that might want those books, or from audiences in libraries that want the books? And one of the surprises for us is how strong that demand continues to be, and how many institutions really do want the books we publish and are excited to get them. And so in 6 years, we've donated over 25,000 copies of Radius books to schools and institutions. And the schools are a little surprising as well, because initially I thought the kinds of books that we publish would be most appropriate for older students, high school, college age, you know, university students. In truth, there are now a lot of programs for younger grammar school students that are really interested and engaged in the objects we publish, I think because they're interactive, because the art is different and things that they haven't seen before. And while they may not be studying from an art historical perspective, the content, the written content of the book, which we also work very hard on, they are engaging and having a sense of what an artist's vision is just by seeing the book visually.
I wonder also if they haven't grown up in much more of a digital context. I mean, obviously they're going more in a digital context than we did, but they may not have had their hands on books, and there is such a delight in objects when you're a kid, and this may be fulfilling that in a way that they're just not getting at home or even from their school libraries.
I think that's possible, yeah.
Let's talk about that also. I mean, you're doing these books that are very much about being material objects and paper and cardboard and the various materials that you use in your books. And this is in a digital age when everybody's using Kindles and readers and iPads and stuff to read. Is Radius Books in some way a response to the digital world?
It was never consciously a response to that. I've always loved books. I've always been fascinated by the physical nature of books, and I've always loved to read. But I, as a reader, and I think all of us are wading into this digital world in relationship to books and reading in ways that we're trying to all figure out. And I know it's an issue for publishing of all kinds, not just book publishing and not just art book publishing. But as a reader, when technology evolved and I could go on a trip and instead of packing 12 books in my suitcase, I could pack an e-reader or an iPad and have all those books accessible, I was very excited about it, and I do that as well when I read. I've discovered over time that I enjoy having that physical object in my hand, and I think my retention of information is better when I actually read the physical object, much more so than when I read it digitally. And I think there are a lot of people of my generation or around my generation who are like that. Now, what happens with my nephew's generation as young kids now, how they'll respond, I don't know. Specifically in art books, I think we occupy this niche where we are creating these objects that can't be replicated in digital form. You can take the text and you can put it in digital form. You can take the images and put it in digital form, but they don't form the same kind of complex object. So we may be a little bit more immune to the changes in digital technology than maybe other kinds of publishers are. It certainly feels that way in terms of how our books are received and how things are happening in terms of the continuing success and growth of art book publishing, which tends to be growing now as opposed to diminishing in the way it is in other avenues.
What kind of feedback are you getting from your readers?
We get all kinds of fascinating feedback. We get bookstores now that are just super excited about the books we publish. They want everything we do regardless of the content, which has been really confirming. A lot of booksellers, a lot of book buyers are driven purely by the content. It now feels like we have an avenue whereby people knowing our name, they're interested in who we publish. So if we publish something that's an artist who's unknown, then a bookstore, a book buyer, a book collector is maybe going to look at that because it's affiliated with our name. And that's, I think, a factor of just being around longer and people knowing who we are. And that's been exciting. The donation program, we now have schools and libraries that do whole programs around just our books and are excited about having the things that we give them, which is a particular way of looking at books and artist books. And we're not the only ones out here doing this. There's some remarkable other art publishers, but we do it in our own specific way, and it's nice to get that feedback from the public at large.
So tomorrow you're having an event at the Farmers Market from 5 to 8. It's a free event, and it's an artist party that includes a book sale, a sign-a-thon, video shorts, silent auction. A lot of the artists whose work you've published in Radius Books are going to be there. Is that correct?
That's right. This started as a pretty simple idea. It's grown into something much bigger that we're very excited about. But it started with this idea that I often refer to the people, the artists that we publish, the writers, the poets, as being part of the Radius family, because we work very intimately with them. We become very close. And it does at times feel like a family. But I had this realization that while I may have close relationships to all of them, and they may know of each other's reputations, they don't have much of a connection to each other. And so we came across this idea of inviting them to all come to Santa Fe for a weekend to have an opportunity to meet and engage with each other. But that also seemed like a really good opportunity for Santa Fe and for the community here to get to meet a lot of these amazing people that we've published. So the event on Saturday, we have over 40 artists that are coming.
Out of 82 books.
And a lot of those books are published with estates that are no longer alive. So we didn't have 82 artists to publish. So the response has been really great, amazing. So they're coming. They'll be there and available to sign books. We're turning the Farmers Market building into a big bookstore. We'll have all of our books so people can come and see what we do, talk to some of the artists, get copies signed. We also asked several of the artists to do short 2-3 minute films on their books and how it evolved and how it happened. So we'll be showing those. We'll have food trucks and we'll have a kids area if people want to come and bring their kids and be able to look at books at the same time.
David Chicky is publisher and creative director of Radius Books. They're on the web at radiusbooks.org. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll see you tomorrow late afternoon at the farmers market.
That sounds great. Thanks, Mary Charlotte.